Welcome to Torah Timecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Esther Wachsack, and today we will be learning Parsha Re'eh. Parsha Re'eh opens with a commitment that when the Jews enter the land, they will need to go to Har Gerizim and Har Ebal. Therefore, the tribes will split up, and a ceremony of reciting the divine blessings for those who follow Hashem and divine curses for those who worship foreign gods is described. This ceremony will only be performed when the Jews actually enter the land in the time of Yehoshua. And we, in fact, read about this happening at the end of the 8th chapter in the book of Yehoshua. The Jews in Dvarim are then told to destroy all the sites of foreign worship and to instead set up a special place of centralized worship of Hashem. In this special place, all Jews will gather and bring korbanot to Hashem. It will be a place of rejoicing for all Jews with their Creator. We are reminded of many laws pertaining to this worship, like the prohibition on consuming blood, the requirement for tithing, and others. Jews are allowed to eat meat within our towns, provided there is no blood consumed. However, all sacrifices must only be in this designated place. A further exhortation to remain different from our pagan neighbors is given. If a false prophet urges you to foreign worship, they must be executed. So too, if any friends or neighbors urge you to do a Avodah Zarah, you must not cover it up. Rather, you need to report them to the authorities. The requirement to destroy an Ir HaNidachat, a city that has turned entirely to idol worship, is given. The Jews are then reminded to remain apart from the surrounding nations, and this is done by not mutilating as a sign of mourning, and to only eat kosher and properly slaughtered animals. Food consumed needs to be sanctified, i.e. no mixing of milk and meat, proper tithes must be taken. The laws of Maaser Sheni and Maaser Ani are explained. Maaser Sheni is a tithe taken that needs to be eaten around the sanctuary. If the distance is too great to transport the tithes, you may exchange them for money to be spent on food within Jerusalem. Maaser Ani is given to the poor of your town. These two types of Maaser alternate within the Shemitah schedule. The Parsha continues with the laws of Shemitah, the sabbatical year, specifically the forgiving of debts, an exhortation to be generous with those in need as part of our godly worship come next. The Parsha continues with the laws of an Eved Ivri, an indentured Jewish servant, and the requirement to consecrate the firstborn animal to God. The Parsha concludes with a review of the Shlosh Regalim, the three holidays of Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot that require Jews to come together in the Makom HaMikdash. This parsha is a continuation of the mitzvah section of Sefer Dvarim. However, it contains a shift. As Rav Itiel Gold points out, we begin focusing on specific commandments, as opposed to more general exhortations, most of which are focused on the upcoming conquest of Israel and how we are to take possession of the land. There are two main themes in this parsha. The first is the mikdash. We are commanded to remove all traces of idol worship and to sanctify our new land. This sanctity is going to be centered in a place that will be designated by Hashem. We are commanded to shut down any person or town that threatens the godly place we are trying to build. This sanctity will be carried over into the foods we eat, even to how we treat our bodies. This place will be where Jews gather for holidays to greet Hashem and their fellow Jews. The second theme is about building a just society. We have to treat those with less, whether a criminal sold into slavery, or the poor within our towns, or someone forced to borrow money, in a mode that reflects the godliness of both them and us. The money we make is not truly ours. Rather, it belongs to Hashem, and therefore we have sabbaticals. Many of the laws of kashrut and the exhortation against idolatry and idolatrous behavior are framed as key to keeping us as a separate godly people. As we're told in Parak Yudalad Pasuk Bet, Ki am kadosh atah l'Hashem Elokecha, for you are a people consecrated to your Hashem, your God. Ubacha bachar Hashem liot lo la'am segula mikol ha'amim asher al pnei adama. Hashem chose you from among all other peoples on earth to be a treasured people. This is showing our second theme about being a godly people and how that will manifest in how we treat our fellow humans. Together, these two themes are laying the foundation for how Jews will not just enter the land, but hold the land. As Rabbi Michael Hatton points out, quote, to emphasize that Israel's entry, settlement, and success in their new land are by no means guaranteed. Rather, the matter is completely conditional upon the people being faithful to God and to his commandments and steadfast in their rejection of idolatry and its associated licentious rites, end quote. As we see in prophecies uttered hundreds of years after Moshe, Tzion b'mishpat tipadeh, Tzion will be redeemed with justice. This is going to be a foundation of our holding on to the lands. The site of the Beit HaMikdash will not only be dedicated to sacrifices, but it will contain the Sanhedrin, the highest court in the biblical system, which was found in the Lishkat HaGazit, as outlined in the Mishnah and Sanhedrin. Interestingly, there were actually two other courts found within the Beit HaMikdash complex, one at the entrance to the Temple Mount and one at the entrance to the Azara, or the courtyard of the Beit HaMikdash. Chazal, in several Gemaras, explain that the high status of the Sanhedrin is dependent on its being located at the Lishkat HaGazit, in their meeting at the Temple Mount. In fact, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah tells us that once the Sanhedrin was exiled from the place of the Beit HaMikdash, it no longer decided capital cases. For as we are told, Ki mitzion teitzei Torah udvar Hashem Yerushalayim, for from Tzion will the Torah come forth, and the word of Hashem will come from Jerusalem. Why do we have this intertwining of sanctity stemming from the Mikdash and social justice towards the poor and vulnerable? How are these the two pillars on which our bonds to the land will be tied? I believe a key to exploring this connection will be found by examining two seemingly unconnected details within our parsha: the laws of Eved Ivri, the indentured servants, and the details of the choosing of a location for the Mikdash. By examining both of these, we will shed light on the true key to becoming Bnei Eretz Yisrael. There are some interesting anomalies in the verses about Eved Ivri, specifically how the mitzvah in Sefer Dvarim differs from that was found in Sefer Shmot. While the laws recorded are similar, there are different words, different laws, and these reflect a different focus. In Shmot, the verb commonly used is yitzia, to go out. There's discussion of the status of the wife and children of this servant who is going out. The master is referred to as the third person. The focus is really on the servant and his right to be set free. In Dvarim, the main verb used is shiluach, to send him forth. The psukim here refer to the master in first person. The master is the focus, specifically his obligation to send forth his servant. The psukim in Dvarim include details, such as the requirement to send the Eved Ivri out with gifts that are not mentioned in Shmot. Dvarim focuses on the obligations one Jew has to another. As the pasuk says, Lo yikshe be'inecha b'shleichach oto chafshi me'imach. When it is time to set one free, do not feel that it is difficult for you. Ki mishnes char sachir avdecha sheshanim, for in the 6 years you have been given double the service of a hired worker. Upeirachacha Hashem elokecha b'chol asher taseh. Moreover, Hashem will bless you in all that you will do. Hashem is encouraging the master and promising reward for freeing this servant. This is mirrored in the laws of Shabbat, which are found in Sefer Dvarim, as opposed to the laws of Shabbat in Sefer Shmot. In Sefer Dvarim, the focus is on the obligation of landowners to allow a day of rest for all their workers. Dvarim is Moshe preparing the Jews to enter the land. That means they need to begin living as free people. Slaves think about what they are owed. To be free, they need to begin thinking of their obligations, ways in which they owe others, not just what is owed to them. As Rabbi Jonathan Sacks points out in his Haggadah, open quote, reaching out to others, giving helps to the needy, and companionship to those who are alone, we bring freedom into the world, and with freedom, God, end quote. The second key is found in the command to establish a place of central worship for the Jewish people. Note that I didn't say Jerusalem. Jerusalem is never named within the five books of Moses. At this time, when Moshe is standing in Arvot Moav, it is still a Jebusite city, and it will be for hundreds of years, and Hashem does not mention its name. In fact, in 21 places in Sefer Dvarim, starting in this week's Parsha, we encounter the phrase, Hamakom asher yivchar Hashem, the place that Hashem will choose. Given that Hashem knows where this place is going to be, why not name it directly? The Rambam, in the third section of Mor Nevuchim, gives several reasons. The strongest one is that Hashem did not want there to be disputes among the tribes about whose portion would contain the site of the temple. Therefore, the tribes are not told where it will be. This is why we are only commanded, per the Brayta in Sanhedrin, to establish this Mikdash once there is a king, so that all strife between the Shvatim will fall away. We see that at its core, the Mikdash, the city of Jerusalem, was supposed to be uniting, not divisive. It is as we read in Tehillim, Kuf Chaf Bet, Yerushalayim HaBnuya Ki'ir Shechubra LaYachdav, Jerusalem built up is like a city that is all joined together. The Malbim on the verse points out, Midabar b'shevach Yerushalayim, the verse is speaking in praise of Jerusalem, Mitzayir et ha'uma b'klala k'guf achad, it's describing the entire nation as being like one body. V'Yerushalayim hi ha'ir shechubra layachdav, and Jerusalem is the city that connects them as one. V'hine beit Hashem ha'nimtza ba, and behold, the house of Hashem that is found within her, within Jerusalem, hi ha'kli ha'mechin et ha'guya ha'klalit, El Chol Hashchina Venefesh HaElokit Ba, that she, the temple, is the tool that prepares the whole body to receive the divine presence and the godly soul. The Malbim is explaining that the Beit HaMikdash is the tool to unite God and the Jewish people. Jerusalem can only be identified in the future, when the Jewish people are ready to not fight about it between themselves, when they see themselves as one body that unites to serve Hashem. And so we return to our original question. Why are the Mikdash and the laws of how we treat other Jews intertwined within this Parsha? And why are they key to how we possess the lands? I hope the answer is now obvious to us. It is only through the social justice, through treating each Jew as a brother, acting with kindness and justice towards them, focusing on how we come together as a people, not what we can each individually get, that we can be united as one people. The Beit HaMikdash can only be built when we are united, and it then becomes the site of justice and fairness in all our dealing with other people, because that is just as key as the korbanot we offer to Hashem. The two goals, our connection with Hashem and our relationship with our fellow Jews, are not two distinct themes. They are the same thing. And this amazing society we're looking to build, it can only come when we think not about what we are owed, but what we are obligated to do. What we owe to others, when we twin these two things, how we worship Hashem with how we treat others, with one never abrogating the other, that we can truly hold on to this most holy of lands. Shabbat shalom, and thank you so much for joining me today.